and myself, Chair John Nona. We're here today to discuss an item that has been on our agenda last year, last term, regarding a provision for an alternative for consumer pricing protection. This legislation was considered last year at three meetings of this committee on February 23rd, March 16th, and April 20th, 2009. It was also the subject of a public hearing held on April 13th, 2009, at which there were five speakers. Our existing law requires that prices of consumer goods be hand-stamped on those goods. And just for reference of what the existing law provides, it includes in the definition of consumer goods, goods sold by retail merchants which are intended to be used by consumers primarily for personal, household, or family purposes, and includes but is not limited to furniture, household furnishings, items commonly known as appliances, and automobiles. So this existing law covers more than just items in food stores. But it's interesting to note that it accepts from the definition of consumer goods, or says it doesn't apply to consumer goods, which are fresh milk, fresh eggs, food sold for consumption on the premises, fresh produce, non-food consumer goods, and certain other exceptions. So that's the current law. The proposed law would allow a retail store, food store, or other store selling consumer goods that fall within the law to provide for an alternative way to for consumers to check the price of an item. And that would be to allow to have scanners, to require that there be scanners in the stores. And the number of scanners depends on the square footage of the store. But under the proposed new law, there still has to be the price of the item on the shelf. The waiver is good for only a one-year period. It can be revoked, and the Department of Consumer Affairs can make ongoing inspections. And in those inspections, a scanner will be allowed a 2% error rate. So it has to be 98% of the time. And there was a question that arose last year in our meetings as to where that standard came from. That's a New York State standard, and it's a National Institute of Standards and Testing standard as well. There are certain penalties for noncompliance, and there's also a cost, there's a fee to be able to participate in this program to have the scanner. Last year at our meetings, we had a number of speakers. At the public hearing, there were five speakers, as I said. Three of them supported the law. Two of them had some criticisms of the proposed new law. We had criticisms from the New York Public Interest Research Group and the program's director of Consumer Union. In support of the law was the Food Industry Alliance of New York State, who's represented then and is represented today by Patricia Broadhagen. Gary Brown, our consumer protection director, who is no longer here at Westchester County, but now is with New York State, and he's on the phone, and I thank Gary for calling in today and participating, because he's one of the experts in this area. And then we also heard from John Woods, who was a union member of the United Food and Commercial Workers Union, who spoke in support of the law. We also received correspondence from the Business Council of Westchester in support of the law, and I think we had another several other speakers. We received a letter from our County Consumer Advocacy Board in support of the proposed new law. I also would note for the record that there are, of the 62 counties in New York State, five of which are New York City, 43 counties have no item pricing law whatsoever. 19 do have item pricing, and 10 of the 19 that do have an item pricing like our existing law, have enacted a provision that we're suggesting or proposing today and was proposed last year that would provide for scanners as an alternative to a price on an item. And those counties are most of the urban counties in New York State. counties that have cities in them or are suburban counties. Includes Rockland, Erie, Nassau, Suffolk, Schenectady, St. Lawrence, Oneida, Rensselaer, and Ulster County. All have laws like the ones we have, although I think, and Gary Brown should correct me if I'm wrong, I think our law provides for some additional protections that those existing laws don't. Is that right, Gary?
Yes.
Okay. I think maybe I'll start by asking our sealer, John Gashion, to add anything to what I just said, and then ask Gary to comment.
No, I think the only thing, and you did mention it, it's important to remember that there will be a shelf tag requirement, and that will apply not just to food stores, as the state requires it now, but it will also apply in non-food stores. That shelf tag requirement doesn't exist now for non-food stores. Additionally, it will not, our department will continue to act on complaints. This will not hamper in any way if we have a consumer complaint or a wave of complaints against a particular store or a change of stores or a chain of stores, based on some type of pricing error. So it acknowledges the technology. You have to remember that when a consumer checks out, that's the price that they're paying, and it's important that when they get to that scanner, that scanner is accurate.
Okay. Former Director Brown, can I ask you to comment? I know you wrote that there were some concerns expressed by the Consumers Union and the NYPERG, and you wrote a memo on April 15, 2009, which I think everyone should have and is available to the members of the public here, where you responded to those concerns. Can you elaborate on that or give us any additional views you may have?
Yes, thank you, and thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak with the committee today. Just at the outset, I want to make it clear that what I'm about to say, I'm saying at this point in my personal capacity and in my capacity as former Director of Consumer Protection in Westchester, I'm not speaking in my current capacity, which is working for the New York State Consumer Protection Board as Director of Communications and Director of Policy Research. But let me just start out by saying that if you look at the current item pricing law in Westchester County, unfortunately, it's a law which really isn't working. And what I mean by that is that many retailers have elected to simply pay the fine that the county imposes on a yearly basis as an alternative to complying with the law. And if you look at printouts of the enforcement that the county has taken over the years, you will see that we go to the same stores year after year, we inspect, we issue fines, and then when we go back a year later, the percentage of unmarked items is generally the same, meaning that the statute has not been successful in changing retailer behavior and causing retailers to actually price mark each of the items on their shelves. We have many of the major retailers in Westchester, which consistently have 40, 50, 60, or even higher percent of items on their shelves that are unmarked. So a couple of years ago, we inspected the stores at Kmart, and we found many unmarked items, well in excess of 50%, and instead of imposing the fine, which had become the norm over the years, which was in the hundreds or low thousands of dollars, we set a fine of $15,000, and Kmart paid that amount. We then went back to Kmart about 6 months later, and we reinspected and found virtually the identical percentage of unmarked items, meaning that even at the higher fine level, the fine was not succeeding in getting the retailer to change its practices. For most retailers, it's simply cheaper to pay the fine than it is to hire the personnel to mark each item. So when we reinspected at Kmart and we found, again, a very high percentage of unmarked items, we indicated to the store that we were going to be seeking a much higher penalty. And in response to that, Kmart basically said to us, "We're not going to talk with you. We're not going to negotiate with you. We're going to go before an administrative law judge and see what the court has to say." And so based on that second round of inspections, we went before an administrative law judge. Kmart couldn't really and didn't even attempt to deny the finding of fact, which is that there were 1,564 unmarked items that the inspections revealed. And on that basis, the administrative law judge imposed the maximum possible fine, $1,000 per item, which totals $1.564 million. And since that decision was made by the administrative law judge, Kmart has since filed an Article 78 proceeding. The judge who heard the case took several months to decide it, and then when he did, he transferred it to the appellate division as a substantial evidence case. And to the latest that I've heard, the case is still pending in the appellate division.
That's correct. It's still pending. I checked last week.
We don't know yet what the court will do, but even if we, quote, unquote, win the case and the court upholds the fine, I think the bottom line that we've realized is that either stores are going to ignore the fine at the low end or they're going to litigate with us at the high end, but that on a day-to-day basis, item pricing laws are impractical because they're simply not enforceable in a way that will change retailer behavior. In the meantime, we looked at the other counties that had adopted so-called item pricing waiver. I think you have wisely decided to change the name of the law, the nomenclature of the law. But what we realized is that there were these other 10 or so counties that have changed their system, and we think it's a win-win-win. And by that I mean it's a win for consumers, it's a win for retailers, and it's a win for the government because item pricing waiver laws generate revenue, which go into the county general fund. The reason I say that I believe that it's a win for consumers is that instead of the current scenario where consumers might find half the items in a store are unmarked, with this type of law in effect, they're given greater protections. They're given shelf tags, which will tell them what the price will be. They are given the assurance that the store has passed the scanner accuracy test, 98% or better. They are given the use of convenient and conspicuously located price check scanners. And when you put all of that together, it's a means of ensuring that consumers will actually know what the price of a given item is. It's a win for retailers because the current system is expensive and labor-intensive for retailers, which is probably why so few of them have a very good track record of compliance. Some do, but many don't. This will enable retailers to utilize modern scanner technology and use their personnel to better serve customers. There's really no benefit to the customer that comes from the hand stamping of each individual item. And as I mentioned, it's a win for the county because item pricing waiver laws, I'm still using the old name, I apologize, generate revenue. I believe in Nassau, which has had the law for several years now, they're approaching the 1 million mark in annual revenue. And lastly, for retailers which get a waiver and then fall by the wayside and don't have a good track record, there is a very, very strong penalty that can be imposed because they can be forced to go back to item pricing, which means they've got to hire the personnel to do that. And essentially, they would have wasted or forfeited the fee that they would have paid for that year's exemption from the statute. And the indication in other counties which have item pricing waiver is that compliance is very, very good because the retailers are unwilling to undergo the loss that they would if they fail to comply. So that, in a nutshell, is an explanation of why we proposed the law last year. And I'm glad to answer any questions you may have.
Okay. Before we open it up for questions, I'd like to also get some comments and input from Terry Grosselfinger, who's on the line, who was the director. I don't know if you still are, Terry. I understand you have a new position as chief of staff.
I've been sort of called back out of retirement to help in the county exec's office, but yes, I'm still director of consumer protection also. I guess I'm wearing two hats.
Great. Thanks. Could you give us some insights as to Rockland's experience with this
I think Terry's projection as to what will happen in Westchester has been borne out by everything that's happened here in Rockland County. My retail industry here embraced the waiver program. They strongly encouraged us to pass it. And I think Gary is correct also. The consumers have been benefited by this law. Now they can see the price at the shelf price. Again, our pass rate on our scanner accuracy is, although our law also says 98, we've had 99 and 100% scanner accuracy as the stuff gets better on a daily basis. The part about the revenue side, it's obviously been a benefit to our office. We met and exceeded our revenue projections for 2009 in this area. And I think since the institute of the law, we've had one complaint from a consumer regarding a pricing problem. It turned out it was a simple human error, which you just can't avoid completely. And, you know, but other than that, the retailers have been exceedingly good. Another thing just to throw in there, you know, the fact of the matter is the retailers, if they go for that waiver and then they lose it, they also face, quite honestly, the embarrassment of being told or the public being told that they're, you know, that they failed their exams or failed their waivers, and that can create a, I think that's part of the reason why they're so careful at dealing with this stuff. They don't want the PR any indication that their standards are not accurate because it puts their corporate reputation on the line.
Okay. Before I open up for questions, I have one more request. I saw the Chief of Staff, George Oros, here, but I think he left. I wanted to find out if the administration has any comments or position about this proposed law, maybe?
Okay. That we have, but I think we have had discussions with the Director of Consumer Protections.
We did meet last week,
right,
and certainly they were in favor of legislation going forward.
Okay. So let me open it up now for questions by the members of the Legislation Committee who are here, and then we'll open it up for questions and comments from the public.
I just make a comment, John, that I think that one of the problems that the legislators ran into as representatives of close to 1 million people here in Westchester right out of the gate was the way in which the original legislation was advertised, was marketed. I think we concluded that there was a misunderstanding that item pricing waivers would in some way disadvantage the consumer, and certainly that was something that this board was not going to be part of. And so the task really became one to take a step back and move forward with a system that would be good for consumers, number one, that would be good for the industry, and like so many things, it all comes down to how you package it, how you refer to it, the name given to what it is that you're working on, and so to emphasize what we wanted to emphasize, that we were taking these steps to ensure a system that would provide consumer protection as our number one goal, we were all agreeable to revisiting this. In its basic form, it's legislation that's good legislation. It's a good proposal. However, we have to make sure that all elements do what we need done when we look at the most important objective here, and that is to make sure that the consumers are protected when they take their business to retail outlets in the county, and that's what this would do.
Thank you. We've been joined by Chairman Jenkins, who's also a member of the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other comments, questions from legislators?
First of all, let me just review things. So the Kmart action is still pending, right? So we're on there. The time that's run since last spring, as we worked on this, has given us additional time to see how these laws have worked in other counties. And the testimony we have in the record from Rockland and other places, Rockland as of now, but other places, it was working okay. I'm just curious from those in the industry, I assume that record is going on. The 6 or 8 or 10 counties are doing this. As of this moment, the record is still good in terms of.
We tried to reach out to Nassau and Suffolk, didn't we?
No, we haven't.
I mean, just a chance we could update 9 months later. We have just more time, but Pat's not waving your head.
I can add, that I do interact regularly with my counterparts in other counties, and I did speak with the Nassau County, and
experience is still positive.
Experience is positive.
Okay. We are not applying this law to Yonkers and Mount Vernon because they have They have basically a pricing law.
They have an existing local pricing law.
Which is similar to our current law?
Similar to the county law, but on the books and enforced by their local people.
And we can't override their local law.
Well, the law exists. It's sort of like mutual, I guess. But theirs would be more. Well, you could argue is more stringent. It's different. I mean, who knows which is more stringent?
The point is, a retail store in that community doesn't have the option of going to scanners as opposed to
right. They're going to have a local law. So I have
they
just
don't have that option.
They would have to. It's my understanding they would have to adopt it at the local level.
Right.
Or revoke their law. Just
exactly.
Have there just, again, for the record, has there been any discussions over the last several months by the administration or somebody as to whether those municipalities may or may not be interested in revoking the law?
I don't know.
Well, I don't think they want to revoke their law. Whether they want to add this option.
Without revoking the law, right, just add this on, because it's, as a practical matter, it's... they're probably, 30% of the population. So again, you know, in doing this, we talk about Westchester countywide, but there are two exceptions.
Is it Yonkers and who else?
Mount Vernon.
So it's, just to try to go through the specifics of the law, just to make sure you understand. So stores in those jurisdictions not qualified. A separate application is required for each store. So if you have a Shopping Stop that's got, I don't know, X number of stores in the county, each individual store, separate application,
yes.
Except for their stores, but if they have stores in Yonkers or Mount Vernon, they would not apply for those. On a violation, and I'm just sort of getting to that point, is it too onerous? I assume if one of those stores, Stop and Shop, use them as an example, one of their stores on inspections fails. You know, scanners in that store fails. I gather the law talks about this, the waiver for that store is affected, not the other stores. Is it too much of a burden to say if you fail one, you fail across the board? Is that being unfair to the industry?
And gentlemen's here from Stop and Shop.
Okay, what do you mean? I got Stop and Shop.
They do operate in zones.
Uh-huh.
Different parts of the county, different...
Different management.
Different marketing techniques. Pretty good accurate statement.
Yes. Different pricing.
Possibly. I can't speak to that.
Mm-hmm.
But it would give us cause to go look at another Stop and Shop store or whichever supermarket.
I see. So if you found a failure, it would encourage you to go.
A store, and this is something we do with other, not just pricing, but other mm-hmm. things, we should go look at the other stores in that chain.
Okay, but the law as drafted would not in the first instance revoke the waiver for all the stores of that retail establishment. It would just be the individual store. But again, that's a fair point. It would put your department on notice. So if it's I'm talking about a chain as opposed to an individual store, a chain that you would potentially ramp up your efforts on the other stores. All right. Mr. Chairman, there was some discussion, I guess I haven't gotten to the path. Did we do anything with on the penalty side for like a super refund or a larger refund? Has the law been...
We talked about that.
And,
Gary, you had a comment on that, didn't you?
Yeah, I think the concept had been to add what's called a super refund provision. So that if it turns out that a consumer realizes that they have been overcharged, they get not just their money back, but a multiple of it, up to a certain cap. I don't recall the exact details, but it's thought to be an additional incentive to keep the retailers honest.
Right. There's two things. The overcharge would result from the a mismarking of the item. The scanner. Well, how would that work? The scanner could be working. I mean, if the penalty is the waiver, the revocation of the waiver, you say, well, that's the penalty. How, if a consumer, when does the consumer get overcharged, and does that get reported? Does that go to the scanner?
How would the overcharge be discovered? I think he's
yeah. I mean, how does that?
Well, the consumer would notice it. If the consumer notices that they're entitled to the super refund, but there's also a provision in the last draft of the law I had seen requiring stores to make available the results of any refund payments they had to make those results available to us, to Consumer Protection. So we'll know how many super refunds a given retailer had to make.
And the overcharge, because there's a difference, the consumer sees a shelf price, there's a difference between the shelf price and the scan price?
Correct.
That's where the consumer would be on notice that there was an overcharge. It might be that the scanner is working properly, that the shelf price could be inaccurate, and the scanner is working properly. I'm trying to figure out if there's an overcharge, does that mean the scanner is always not working? And it goes towards, or it's possible that the scan is working, the shelf price is inaccurate. I mean, there's a reason that the consumer is saying,
most of the instances we have, it's the shelf price that's wrong.
Right.
You know, the price is reduced from $1.29 to $1.19, whatever else it is, something comes off sale and they don't replace that that shelf price, and then there's a 10-cent overcharge based on the shelf price, because we always take the shelf price to be the actual one, not what's in the computer. So that would be where most of the instances are in Rockland, the few that we've had.
So the scan is correct, and that's how you find out the prices,
It's usually someone has failed to change the price at the shelf, not the scanner itself, some misinput in the computer.
I guess my point is, Mr. Chairman, that if we're trying to create as many incentives as we can to have the store operate properly, keep the scanners in compliance, 100% with the actual pricing, that to add a super refund doesn't necessarily get there. The revocation of the waiver is the major incentive to triple the refunds, when in fact it doesn't necessarily equate to doing a better job keeping the scanner in operation. So whether it takes away the need for the super refund, it's one doesn't equate with the other. It's less. And we're not requiring a notification they gave away. We had to give back 100 refunds last month. Is there anything in here posting how many refunds were given? Is it reported to the department? The retailer has to give gave 50 refunds last month or 100. Is there like a record of the? There's nothing in the law that requires. So let me ask you: do retailers? I mean, is that an indication, a statistic that retailers generally keep? I mean, somewhere in their books that we gave 12 refunds back last month? Is that somewhere in the system that is kept?
Yeah, Ms. Broadhead?
Just to point out that internally, we have several chains represented today, and the internal policy is that if the scanner rings higher than any disclosed price, that's the other thing. Whether it's the sale price, the flyer price, or the shelf price. Mm-hmm. The law says, even if they're wrong, the lowest price is the price. And so if the scanner rings a higher price...
And that may be the accurate price.
It's still wrong because it's not the lowest. Right. That not only does the consumer get that difference, but they get the item free.
That's your policy.
That's industry policy.
That's a store policy.
Yeah, we give it to them.
Yeah. I'm just thinking out loud. I don't know if it's a necessary requirement. So what does it add to the system? People posting how many refunds they gave back last month. I don't know if that's helps push the system any better. So not looking to add additional things. It's not appropriate. I should disclose, Mr. Chairman, I started my career as an attorney at the Consumer Affairs Department in New York City, so that's where I'm just storefront lawyer out there fighting those folks picking on my New York City consumers. So that was full disclosure, right, Mr. Chairman?
Absolutely. Any other comments?
Mr. Chairman, it's interesting, though, everybody has their own experience. I can remember as a kid standing in the in a small A&P in downtown Peekskill as a operator of a cash register, very pleasant woman that we would see each week, would take your items and read the price and put them into the cash register, and it would read out on a long strip of paper. And my mother would always take a look at the thing, and if something looked out of whack, she'd be sure to get back down to that store and explain that they had rung the item up for too much. fast forward 50 years or so, and I find myself, like a lot of people, at one of the bigger stores around in the area, picking up three or four bags of rock salt. And I found it interesting that the I didn't bother to look at it. I put a lot of trust in the system. I went to a couple of different pallets, and there was the very expensive rock salt. I guess it glittered more than the other. And I picked out one that seemed to be adequate and threw four bags into the cart and went through and paid for it, and off I went. And when I happened to look at the receipt later on, there were four items rung up for a much higher price than what had been on the sign on the pallet. And I just chalked it up to, hey, you weren't quick enough to take a look. You know, you waited until you got home, and I don't have time to head on back over to the store. So anyway, it just goes to show you that, you know, there are systems in place that, quite honestly, we don't mind relying upon day in and day out, and perhaps more often than not, they're going to work in your favor. But I don't want to say it's rare when there are errors. I think that there are errors, and probably everyone in the room has experienced them. So it's not a system that where a consumer can be totally relaxed with what's there, but it just reflects, I guess, advances in technology, where we are today and where we were decades ago.
A couple of things. First, to make sure it's very clear, we talk about the number of conveniently located scanners. Is it clear that these are the number of scanners in addition to a scanner at the checkout? So under 3,000 square feet, one scanner. My understanding, it's one scanner somewhere in the store plus a scanner at the checkout. So that makes a total of two in the store. And I'm not everybody maybe used to scan. So because we added, I mean, under 1,500,
you don't have to have a scanner.
They don't need a scanner on the assumption, and it says here that on request of the consumer, my experience is, especially with taking out, we're only talking about the retails, even on a small deli or something, a 1,400, Portchester, a lot of 1,400, 1,500 square foot stores, there may be 1,000 square feet of retail space. To require a scanner somewhere in the store, and if there's one at the checkout, it's sort of like, to me, seems a little overkill. So I listen, but there needs to be one at the checkout, and then you go down the line, one, two, or three, is it that plus? So that's my question.
That's a good question. And I had an email from a constituent that raised that issue, too, about the wording.
For the traffic, I can't tell.
The scanner, where it says no scanner is necessary, but only if an item will be scanned for the price upon the request of a consumer. I think we may need to make.
Well, that implies that if they want to get out of having that requirement, there is a scanner at the checkout. Rather than have a scan 10 feet away, well, you're going to check out right here.
Is that what the intent is?
Well, that's the intent, to have one at the
checkout. What was used when you checked out, you paid.
Right, if there's a scanner at the checkout, you don't need another scanner 10 feet away because the store is most. But a larger store, I mean, it's just unclear from the drafting. Somebody under 3,000 square feet, well, we have one at the checkout. That's our one at the checkout.
So maybe
there's none in the store. So is that so the drafting of the law, it's more clear.
Mr. Chairman?
Right.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah.
Yes. In the language, it says that the stores have to submit their proposed sign and device locations to the sealer for the approval.
Right.
So prior, so as part of the process, in being granted a waiver, the locations of the particular scanners would have to be identified and approved in order to get that.
Well, except that, but except Ken, it's the sealer has to look at the law. The sealer can't make up the law, so the sealer gets the request, the application, the sealer will look at the law, and if you look at the sentence, stores with multiple floors shall be at least one on each floor, which sort of makes sense, but that means if it's only a one floor store, one might qualify, and that could be the under 3,000 square feet, and it's one I mean, you can read it at the counter. And I don't think that was our intent. I think 3,000...
Well, is there a difference between, if I may, through the chair, is there a difference between a price check scanner and a regular scanner?
Yes.
So
okay,
perhaps
what's the difference?
What we need to do is put that wording in.
What's the difference?
Well, where's the...
Mr. Goldfinger again.
Yeah.
All your scanners, like you go into your ShopRites or they can all, they can even scan those for price, but also, like, for instance, the stores here in Rockland, they do a drop-in, they have it, you know, in the bigger box stores. They may have three or four throughout the store. In other words, if you're not sure whether that item is 59 cents or 69 cents, you can go up, scan it, and it's, you know, all it does is we give you the price. On the item, but you know, there's also the scanners at the checkout counter. We don't consider the customer use ones the ones at the count. In other words, where you're going to check out, you can if the store is large enough and our law requires them to have scanners elsewhere. You know that they're just used for that. They don't use the scanner at the register.
Well, should we have?
I think it's stick the word price check. Mm-hmm. There's several places on in this paragraph 7A on the top of the next page.
They call them price check scanners, but then they
stores with multiple
scanners.
Floors, there should be at least one price check scanner conveniently located on each floor. The number of conveniently located price check scanners shall also be dependent on stores retail. I mean, I think if you make it clear, those are price checks versus the checkout. Which
right, in stores with multiple floors, there should be at least one.
Which is saying, Marty, so when in the area where it's defining what that is, as opposed where it says stores retail area, and in that category,
right, the whole paragraph 7A, wherever it says two places it says scanners, it should be price check scanners.
Okay.
To make it,
I agree. In fact, right, maybe we should also begin 7A by saying, in addition to a scanner or scanners at the checkout or at the point of sale.
Well, it starts, the store shall make available price check scanners. So 7A, the first line, it has that, and then it drops. For whatever reason, we dropped the language price check.
Okay, so maybe just saying price check scanner is sufficient.
Yeah, it has a 1, 2, 3, 4, the fifth line and the sixth line.
What do you think, Gary and Terry, people with experience? Should we add something at 7A that says in addition to scanners at the point of sale?
Yeah, maybe just to make it very... Yeah. It's just why you say, to Kent's point, when the sealer gets the application, it's in addition to the checkout scanner, there are so many price check scanners that are required.
Terry and Gary?
Terry Grossman, yeah. That's the way it's worked out well in Rockland County. We have, you know, if they're required to have a scanner, they have it. And it's usually a way, you go to a big box store like Home Depot, you don't want to walk 3 miles to check a price.
Right, but there are price check scanners and checkout scanners. So, right.
Okay.
So just clarify.
Yeah.
In Rockland County, do you differentiate in your actual legislation between point of sale scanners and price check scanners?
No, in matter of fact, my law is a little bit different in that it's, when it comes to price check scanners, it leaves it pretty much to my discretion as to how many, you know, scanners they need. Obviously, the bigger the store, and again, you deal with the items that you're selling. If you're selling, you know, big items, you know, in an appliance store, you don't necessarily have as many scanners as you would, again, in a Home Depot where you could check every little box of screws or
right.
washers or something like that. And then the stores have been very cooperative on putting a scanner in an area that's usually deemed that we take a look at and know that you're going to probably have more questions about pricing here, again, in the screw and washer aisle than you may have in the lumber aisle.
Got it. Thank you.
Yeah, but I think we have this differentiation. So, again, under 1,500 square feet, it says no scanners necessary. Again, it should be no price check scanner necessary.
A store that size, you know, kind of that's a rather small one. You know, if you can go up and have them check the price at the checkout counter before you do that.
Right, that's the way we amended the law last year to exempt those smaller stores, but I don't want to come down to zero, so it should be no price check. So then the 1, 2, and 3 will refer to price check scanners.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think we're okay.
Mr. Chairman, in that spirit, on the last line in that 7A, we might consider adding in like the minimum number of, you know, adding in the word minimum, because the sealer could say that it's more than one in the approval process based on the consideration that was just mentioned, like in the big box store, that one conveniently located scanner could be miles away, you know.
Well, he's got the discretion. If it's over 30,000 square feet, he has the discretion to require more.
It says minimum there. But, all right, so, well, Mr. Chuck said a couple of things. So I want to make sure, all right, so now we understand there's a price check and a...
On this one, maybe we should add at 7A, in addition to scanners at the point of sale, the store shall make available price check scanners to enable consumers to confirm the price of stock-keeping items. These price check scanners, blah, 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 they will add the words price check...
In front of scanner.
In front of scanner on the third from last line of 7A, and then on the second from last line,
right.
Located price check scanners.
Right.
And maybe put the heading, price check scanner.
Yes.
And then say, under 1,500 feet, no price check scanner
absolutely.
Is necessary.
Yep.
But I would strike the word only, because that's confusing. But if an item will be scanned for the price upon the request of a consumer.
Right, but right.
And then put price check under minimum of 3 and such additional price check scanners.
I agree. We don't need but only. You're right. I think that now.
Okay.
We are the legislation committee, so we should. That's good. Okay, so Mr. Chairman, so that was one question. Then my other comment would be to understand again what happens, what a reason to do this. In other words, because I hear reports from time to time, including from one of our colleagues, that people will take those little price tags off an item and stick them on another item to move pricing around. So this would avoid those stores that opt out, wouldn't have to deal with all the people switching prices. And but Mr. Abernathy, for one, mentioned to me the problem on the other side, the problem of consumers taking an item, walking down the aisle, and then changing their mind and putting it, you know, on a shelf someplace else. And then people are getting confused, there's no price. And I know, I'm sure it happens, I've probably done it myself, but is that such a problem to say we shouldn't pass this kind of law? Where does that kind of customer habit fall into, you know, the scheme of things?
I don't buy something that doesn't isn't on the shelf it belongs on.
Well, I don't either. I don't pull it off.
So you're saying it's not a problem. Someone in the store eventually comes, takes it, and puts it back on the...
Or you could scan it.
Tom's not here. I'm just relating. You know, he was coming up with reasons why we shouldn't do this, and that was.
Or you could send a friend in, and they could move it to a different area, and then you could say, okay.
Yeah, but that's all right. Okay, moving on from there. Number C and D. So the end of the law. Seven C and D, and that's the last page. Now I'm getting to more of a. This is the law now. The store shall not charge. Which exceeds, I mean, we've heard sort of industry practice is what the law does, but if we're going to put in the law, the store shall not charge C and D, the store shall make prompt payment. So it gets back to I hadn't read this yet, my comment I asked before about keeping records, because you turn the page, director may revoke, failure to comply with the provision of this chapter. How is, if we keep C and D in, how is the sealer going to enforce or to know that the store is making prompt payment or have been overcharged? It's, you know, I hate to put something in the law if we know it's kind of, the sealer's never going to be able to get to that point. So either, if it's a good thing to have, we have to give the sealer the ability to enforce it. And if we think it's so totally unenforceable, do we, you know...
Yeah, this is Mr. Grossman.
Yeah, what's the answer to that?
Go ahead.
You may want to deal with that on a complaint-driven basis. It gives the arrow in the quiver, but you don't necessarily have to... Yeah, you know, have John or and I think Gary would probably agree, chasing everybody that's out there. At least in Rockland County, they're very quick to pick up the phone and call if they've got a problem. I presume it's similar in Westchester.
I see. So this language works. It gives you the power. Well, it requires the stores not to charge and to make prompt refunds. So that's the direction from the law. Mm-hmm. And then on the enforcement side, as long as you're authorized to revoke a waiver if there's failure to comply, but you enforce it. Basically, as you get complaints, as a practical matter.
That would be my recommendation at the start, anyway. You know,
I don't know how else you would.
Well, the other thing you could do, again, this may be an administrative burden we don't want to impose, is when they reapply for renewal of the waiver, you could require that they provide you a report as to how many times during the year they had to make a overcharge payment back to a consumer.
But for what point? Unless you're going to publish it, what's the point? They did it 5 times or 50 times. Are you going to give them the waiver? As long as you're still going to give them the waiver, they're doing all this record keeping. For what point? It's like self-incrimination. They're not going to tell you how many times they didn't give the refund back. you know, there's another whole area. I was out in Portland, Oregon, where they had all the violations from restaurant, health department violation, and they print them on the front page of the paper, every restaurant, how many violations. You know, if we want to, I'm not suggesting this, move into an area of how many times at the store, overcharge, get refunds. You know, you can go down a regulatory scheme that keep all those records and publish all those things. We haven't done it for restaurants yet. I suggest we do it here. But if we're not going to do that, then to require stores to keep those records and put them on the application, for what purpose? You know, if we're going to give them the waiver anyway.
You wouldn't give them the waiver.
If they had, say, a lot of overcharges and a lot of refunds. Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's...
Although, you know, the part you
does
read,
the sealer have discretion not to do
says that you may revoke a waiver for deliberate overcharging. You still have to prove it's deliberate. Maybe if there's a large number of them, you can argue it's deliberate. I don't know.
You can't give a sealer too much discretion. Say it's in his discretion.
Deliberate means it's intentional.
Or multiple. Is it deliberate or multiple overcharges?
Well, I think you'd have to specify an exact amount. Multiple is too broad.
To our folks on the phone, do you have evidences or instances where some stores, some companies, just multiple problems in terms of overcharges? Or you wouldn't even know if they did, I guess.
We've had, like I said, very little experience with problems over here in Rockland. The industry has been very good, and occasional, you know, we do get reports that, you know, a scanner was wrong, they overcharged me, they refunded, you know, the money, apologized, whatever else it is, the compliance with our thing has been excellent over here. Self-imposed compliance, by the way.
Which I guess that's the point. All these companies are in business. They want to hold on to the customers. It's good business practice.
And we're talking a lot of
to do it the right way. So that's
the larger chain kind of thing. Their corporate image is extremely important
right.
to them. And
it's self-enforcing.
That corporate culture to try and deal with these issues. They don't want to hear from me, quite honestly.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's self-enforcing. The industry, the marketplace speaks. I didn't say that 35 years ago when I was a young consumer. I guess I'm getting old, kid. All right. That's
okay. Any other comments? I have two from additional comments from a constituent. One is, there's a couple of typos that a very sharp-eyed constituent named Mark Rubio pointed out, and that is on the fifth line of Section 1, retail should be singular, retail. So it reads, retail stores that are required by the law. It's the fifth line under number 1, 863.72 number 1. And then he raised the issue of the 2% standard, and is that too strict? On the other hand, we had some of the consumer advocates saying that was too easy. But that's a recognized national standard, right? So I think we're all comfortable with that.
Nationally, and then adopted by the state.
The other point he raised in number 3, and this is one I think we should consider, is that it says that if on inspection the total violations exceed 2%, the department shall not grant a waiver, but the store may within 5 business days request a second inspection. And Mark's point is that 5 days might be too quick a turnaround time to service and repair a scanner that fails an inspection. So maybe he suggested we make it a longer period of time, maybe 2 weeks, he suggests. Is that okay? I mean, that seems to be, if they don't have the waiver, they don't have the waiver. So if they need additional time to fix it, I don't see a problem.
Mr. Chairman, I would just think that based on the standard of 2% being basically a nationally recognized standard, I think that when the store is notified that they have failed the inspection process, I would expect they would want to have due diligence in correcting the pricing, because if it's scanned wrong or whatever things happen as far as the inspection process, they would want to make sure that the problem is rectified almost immediately.
Well, that's changing it to, say, 10 days still allows them to do it quickly, but if they can't get somebody in there to service the scanner, it gives them a little leeway. I mean, this says if they don't do it within 5 days, they can't reapply.
But
they could do it within 5 days,
they will. They probably just shut down that scanner and bring another scanner. How can you operate with a scanner that's not
if you're a store with only one scanner, though?
Yeah. I mean, I didn't see any downside to giving them more time to reapply. Does anybody
ten
have
business
any...
Days? 10 business days?
You're saying 10 business days?
Yeah. And they, and if they want to get that waiver, they'll do it sooner if they can. Any comments or thoughts about that? Just making that 10 business days rather than 5 if there's a if they fail the test and they could want to apply for a
Sounds like a reasonable amount.
Okay. And then what else do we have? We have two other typos, but yeah, you see, it's B. Mark's brother's here. Where's Mark's brother? You did a pretty good job finding the typos.
The one thing he's actually good at.
If you look at B, stores must also have a shelf price for each stock keeping item which are visible, should be is visible. And
he's an English major, not just a special.
And he's got another R that should be an is, which I haven't found yet.
It's right there. It's the same line.
Yeah, which,
and
is,
which
located,
is located.
Because it's talking about one shelf stock keeping item. So, thank you, Mr. Russo.
Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Chairman, one other question. The requirement to have all retailers have the shelf price. So that now is that it's underlined now. Is that not in our existing existing item pricing law?
No.
So in terms of passing this legislation, we haven't necessarily heard from it. This is a new requirement to all retailers, right? They're going from.
If
they apply for a waiver. This is all part of the waiver
right.
application process. So,
but the practice is, I think they do have shelf prices.
Well, I don't know, but it's not required.
No, it's not required.
It's required by state law for grocery items.
Yeah, but not for the
okay.
other quote consumer.
Okay, so it's not okay. So it's not a new requirement across the board. Only if they seek to go for the waiver of
that's
the item pricing, then they do the item. Okay.
Reading this
out of context. Okay.
Okay, now let's open it up to all the people that were good enough to come here today. Anyone wants to be heard? Any questions, comments, thoughts? Some of you, we heard from you before. Like
yeah,
Patricia,
you have Pepper hitting from the Food Industry
yeah.
Alliance. Let you all know who is here. They just come out today. So it's Tom Ritz from ShopRite and Vicki Graff and John Ryan from A&P. And that means they operate also the Pathmark stores in the county. And Mitch Klein from Crasdale Foods. The headquarters is here in White Plains. They serve as independent markets. And Paul Janish from Stop and Shop. Together, they represent most of the food sales, I would say, in the county. And we just want to thank you for bringing the bill back up. And appreciate listening to your dialogue today. And being able to be a part of it. We continue to support it. We think it will be better for customers, and quite honestly, we think it will help operators run better stores. That's what we've seen in the other counties.
Thank you. Well, this law has now been the subject of 4 legislative committee meetings.
Yes.
Plus, it will
and
be the subject
hearing.
Of another public hearing. So do we want to vote this out at this point for a public hearing or for all purposes, whatever the committee desires?
So moved, Mr. Chairman, all purposes.
Do we have a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So I guess we can put it on next week to set a public hearing after that. Okay.
And you have to make the changes.
Excuse me?
You have to have more make the changes that you...
Right. So would you get this down to the
yeah,
level?
As amended. Quick, Mr. Chairman, just we could probably count the days now. We actually have a meeting on next Monday, and then meeting the
following Monday.
But to set the public hearing, I think we need with 5 business, so we may not.
I
be
think
able
we should set it for the meeting
after
the 22nd
yeah, so
I don't think
you're right. Just
the 22nd
timing,
of
right?
March,
so. Just so you know, probably we meet again March 1st, but I don't think there's enough time to do all the public noticing.
Right. So we'll make it March 22nd.
So the public hearing will be March 22nd. That's the. Mr. Chairman, I know for the record that I do some business in a Caribbean island. I went to their big supermarket on the island, and they have a scanner on the wall. So they've gotten to the point where that's so they're using the technology down there. I particularly noticed that they have discussed this legislation here. So consumers on that island use the scanning technology.
Was that Long Island?
Yeah, Long Island. A little warmer.
Yeah. we have to approve some appointments that were passed out of the legislation, out of the appointments committee. Gary and Terry, thank you very much.
You're very welcome, folks. Good luck.
Appreciate your
Gary, it's Marty. Yeah. Marty, good luck to you.
Yeah, Gary.
Yeah, good luck in your new position. Terry, good luck.
Good luck, too.
And Terry, good luck in your new position, too. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And Bill, you're staying on?
Yes, I am. Mr. Chairman, could I ask that the record reflect, had I been there, I would have voted yes on this measure.
Thank you.
Right. Thank you.
But is he, okay, but he's, it's not.
He's not.
Right. But it will be reflected in the minutes.
We have a rule now that allows.
Next time, invite the public into your bedroom there, Bill.
Participate by telephone or video conference. If they participate by video conference, they can vote. If by telephone, they can't. But if they participate by video conference, because of the open meetings law, the public has to be invited to wherever they are. So Bill's homesick, so I'm sure just let it.
Come on, coffee with Bill.
But
in his
thank
kitchen.
You, Bill, for you participating, even though you're homesick.
By the way, the operator wants 8 more quarters.
Okay. The next item on the agenda is appointments to
do
the.
Do we have that in the bottom? Do we have those? Was it in my?
It's on your agenda.
It's not in our package, is it?
No, because we don't put all copies.
Oh, okay.
Where's your agenda?
It's my agenda. It's in here somewhere.
Maybe.
That's minutes.
That's minutes. Oh, I have to do minutes.
I'm going to get out of the
letter of these.
Then I go. Okay.
Thank you.
You have to vote on these, too. We need you to vote on these, otherwise, you don't have enough people. Okay, there are four, there are six appointments. One is to the Board of Health, and that was Dr. Doug Aspros, who is from White Plains.
City representative from White Plains.
White Plains. But he has been the chairperson of the Board of Health for the last 15 years, and
yes.
On it for 25 years. A very impressive individual.
Yes.
He instructed us as to the difference between health and public health.
There you go.
So, yes.
You have a motion to approve Dr. Aspros.
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All in favor, aye?
Aye.
Bill, you're in favor too, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
The next was the appointment of Budget Director Lawrence Sewell.
These bills are
no, 11. The 11?
No,
Chiverko? Kevin Chiverko.
Oh, Kevin Chiverko, Acting Commissioner of the Corrections Department, mm-hmm. whom we met.
Yes.
Is there a motion to approve him? Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor, aye? Aye. Opposed? Aye. Now, when was Mr. Sewell considered?
Thursday.
Okay, I missed that. So the next one is Mr. Sewell to be Budget Director.
It's Mr. Sewell.
Sewell, excuse me.
Okay.
Yeah. Is there a motion?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed. And the third is the Westchester Healthcare Corporation. These were for voting members. There were four people who were recommended, but there were only three positions, three voting positions. So the individuals that were approved were Dr. Orlando Adamson, and then Patrick McCoy and Michael Stabe, who were both previously non-voting members.
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Is there a second?
Well, how many were voting on? How many?
Three. So three openings.
B16 were not a...
It just went into committee.
Okay.
To be reviewed.
Because okay. There were only three vacancies.
I got you.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
So, Kevin, are there any vacancies now?
There are. There, just for the record, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Mr. Chairman, there are three. All the non. After we approve these on the floor, mm-hmm. there will be three vacancies in the non-voting ranks. There's a CE appointment, a majority leader appointment, and a minority leader appointment in the non-voting members, which will have opportunity.
Okay. So this fills all the voting members.
That fills the voting members.
Okay.
There is I believe there is one person that is coming up in April that is going to be up for reappointment, mm-hmm. and there's a governor's appointment in there. Sorry.
And that's a voting member, the governor's appointment.
The voting
member. Okay, final item is approval of minutes of the meeting of February 1st.
So moved.
For a second?
Second.
All in favor? Aye. Opposed? None. Any other business? Next week, we are considering the source of income legislation.
Oh, goody.
Why?
Because I think we have an obligation to consider it, whether we're going to pass it or not. I think we have an obligation.
Can we see an open
Absolutely. You are so right.
Do I have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second? Morty, you got to say I want to talk to you. Okay. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
I'm going to propose, which